alpha dog. I love that.
Welcome to the Alpha Dog Capital Deal Flow Channel. This is where we talk about alternative investments that you cannot find on Wall Street. Listen and learn about deals, funds, syndications, and business ventures. We are not investment advisors, and we do not give investment advice, but we do talk about investments you may want to consider. Don't forget, always do your own due diligence.
Great. Well, welcome to another edition of the Alpha Dog Capital Deal Flow Channel. And today I'll be talking to Danny Fry, who's in North Carolina, and he's in the hotel investment industry. And we're going to get into that. But Danny, why don't you take a minute or two to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and a little bit about your background.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot, John. It's a pleasure being on the show. I'm really excited about this, actually. Done one or two of these in the past, but this is really fun. I'm looking forward to it. My name is Danny Fry. I'm the CEO of Tempest 22. But before I was the CEO of a syndication private equity company, my background is in the military. I spent 20 years active duty. First 12 years as a combat engineer, and then 8 years in special operations, a lot of time here at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
So oh, great. Still
in and around the Fort Bragg area.
Yeah.
So, and what's interesting about it, the military has a way of, forcing you to become a real estate investor. And that's kind of how we got our start. In 2009, we bought our first house, a starter home. And then about 8 months later, I had to move to Texas.
Okay, there you go. Instant landlord.
Yeah, you couldn't sell it. I mean, you're going to take like a $15,000 loss to sell a house.
Yeah.
So, we had no other choice. And, you were kind of forced into, being a landlord. We hired a company. I wanted nothing to do with management. And I would much rather pay somebody to do it than me do it on my own. And after 5 years, moved back to North Carolina, moved into the house. We owned it for 5 years, lived in it for 8 months, and had 1 month of vacancy. So the house had appreciated $20,000, and the debt had been paid down, $6,000-$7,000. And we're looking at that like, hey, man, this is pretty cool. Let's keep. What do we do next?
Yeah. So what did you do next after that? Did you start buying some rental property, or what did you do?
Actually, it took me a little while. It took me a little while to really dig into it. I wanted to get into real estate. I really liked what was happening with our house. I hadn't read or listened to much in real estate investing at that point. And I came across a book. I can't recall the name of the book, but it was by Dean Graziosi. And it was like some kind of call to action in the title. It was like, invest in real estate now, somewhere around 2011, 12.
Okay.
And he had a nighttime show on one of the local networks, and I got plugged into that. And then I plugged into his program. And, the tactic there was, I don't know. You definitely don't want to do it now, but it was like, hey, just find just throw a bunch of offers, whole boatload of offers, 25, 50 offers, see which one sticks. If you throw a whole bunch of offers in and you get one that approved, you're winning, right? And nowadays, real estate, you're not going to make any friends in real estate doing it that way. And lowball. I mean, they were talking 65% of the ask price, And I did that, but we ended up with a 4-unit apartment complex.
Well, there you go.
And lived in one unit, rented out. It was in the worst neighborhood. And I helped my wife move about half of the stuff in, and then I left for Afghanistan for a year.
Okay.
So, that's part of the, just kind of the way it goes with the military sometimes. While I left from the military, while I left on Afghanistan, I just absorbed everything I could. every podcast I could find, and any YouTube channels that I could watch, any books I could pick up. You know, I'm a voracious reader, and when you're in a foreign country where there's nothing to do, you can't go. It's not like you can go to the bar or go to the restaurant or anything like that. It's literally you're working and, you know, entertain yourself some other facet. So I just, every time I would go, I would just, you know, delve right into reading as much as I could. And I started underwriting deals, right? Pretty much immediately. I would come home from work, do, you know, an hour of education, and then I would find five houses just on Zillow, right? And I'd use the estimate to figure out like what the, you know, basically I use that as a fair market value. Mm-hmm. In my, you know, because I'm training myself. I wasn't really putting these, you know, these weren't deals that were going to action. It was just I needed to train myself to be able to understand how to find value. And so I would just pull up Zillow, take a neighborhood, and I'd pick one house and just run it through an underwriting database to see how much would it cost me. And you know, most deals don't work, right? But what I would do is I would say, okay, well, what is the number where it would work? And what do I think the likelihood that somebody's going to accept an offer at or near that number? And I just, you know, I did five of those a day for a year or so.
Wow.
And before we started even moving on. So, you know, I'd underwritten, you know, 1,000, 1,500 deals before I ever even really got into real estate. I retired in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I retired in 2019 and I'd known for 5-10 years I was going to get out, go get my real estate license, start, you know, doing real estate sales and, you know, buying as many houses as I could. And I got out and I started doing that. And I had a really phenomenal first year in real estate. And, you know, but I grew too fast for it, I think. And the market conditions kind of changed. And then, you know, the right networking, meeting the right people, I found myself working in commercial real estate. A lot more money there. There's a whole lot less headache when, you know, dealing with people. You know, residential real estate is very emotional. You know, people are emotionally driven. Mm-hmm. And commercial real estate is very, you know, numbers-based. It's very logical. So, you know, you're dealing with business people and you're dealing with investors, you know, mm-hmm. versus dealing with somebody whose home that was for 20 years and you know, there's some sentimental value to it, right? And so they take offense and, you know, things like that. So it just became really awesome, you know, switching into the commercial space. And I just, you know, the passion I already had for real estate, once I got into commercial, was like tenfold. You know, I'm like, oh man, this is really incredible, you know?
Yeah, so explain how you got from that point, you got, you know, your eyes open to the world of commercial real estate. How did you get into the focus of investing in hotels? Let's talk about that. I think that's kind of like a little bit of an expertise that you have now.
Right. That is a great question. I had been listening to a lot of real estate guys radio and a couple other things that were, you know, really turned me on to syndicating. Right. I like the idea. As an agent, I was representing about 20 or 30 investor clients with, you know, all had around $35,000 to $50,000 that they're looking to invest into a house, you know, and we're all looking for the same thing because I'm an investor as well. I'm an investor agent, you know, and then so you have to really massage that fiduciary obligation that, you know, give it to them first, let them turn it down. And if they don't turn it down, then, you know, then. So it created, yeah, and then as the inventory started drying up and the investor pool in our area got very saturated. So I just started thinking, man, it'd be really cool if we could pull all these people together and then go after, you know, a big multifamily complex or something. And then I started working with a client on a multifamily deal that fell through. It was a big, you know, $12 million deal. You know, I'm doing $180,000 houses, and now I'm brokering a $12 million hotel deal. Or not hotel, I'm sorry, apartment deal. And he had it all. He had everything in place, you know, and it fell through. And so now, you know, retrospectively, I was able to take that lesson and apply it to, you know, the pursuit into syndications. And basically what it was is he had all the investors. They loved the deal. They had the management. They had the plan. They had all the organizational structure. But he didn't have a legal structure in place. You know, so when you're offering somebody to come on board, if there's no legal structure, if there's nothing that they can sign right now, you don't have to. And and that's what happened. You know, he had it all put together. We had it negotiated. We had, you know, purchase and sales agreement signed. We were, you know, getting ready to put deposits down. And there's nothing for these investors to sign. So, you know, they all backed out. We lost the fund. You know, we never got the funding. And I'm like, okay, I couldn't make that happen, right? I think I could have made that deal happen if I knew how to take care of the legal stuff. And so we spent some pursuit looking into, you know, I changed my LinkedIn profile. LinkedIn is, you know, it's criminal how valuable LinkedIn is for free.
Yeah. And, yeah. It's great. I agree. I've got your LinkedIn profile up in front of me right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think I got like 6,500 connections on there now, and I try to meet every single one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Incredible.
They're all professional, and you know, so it's a great tool. And so I changed my profile to a commercial real estate broker and investor. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy reach out to me that said, "Hey, man, I'm a hotel flipper. You know, I see you're an investor. You know, that sound interesting." I'm like, "Yeah, let's talk." He said, "All right, well, you bring me, you know, basically I own, you know, 5 or 6 hotels. I manage about another 20 and, you know, tons of experience. We built all that, you know, that relationship out." And he said, "Look, if you can bring me down payment money, which is typically around 20%, and you can bring me some improvement capital, then I'll give you 49% of the hotel deal." I'm like, "Great, man. That's, you know, I can come up with, you know, maybe 20%, 30%, you know, total of the acquisition, and we're doing value add. So this is the now price, and we get 49%. I'm like, man, I can build a business around that." And so David and I worked for a while, just kind of pushing stuff back and forth. And I just couldn't, you know, I'm asking all these real estate attorneys how to do a syndication. How do I structure this? What do I need to do? What do I need to learn? And that's the wrong tree. You know, attorneys do different things. And so I didn't know that I needed to speak, you know, I thought this is real estate, so I should talk to a real estate attorney. And what I found is that you had to, you needed a securities attorney. Mm-hmm. And so we just didn't know what to do. And the Real Estate Guys Radio put on an event twice a year called the Secrets of Successful Syndication. I'm like, well, I'll find out there. Sign me up. So myself and a business partner went out and the first real speaker, you know, not the introduction, but the first, you know, actual speaker was Mauricio Raoult or Bethany LaFlamme, I can't recall, that was with Premier Law Group. And I'm like, oh, I've got everything I needed from this. You know, I knew how to do everything else. I've got everything I needed in the first 10 minutes of this event. Everything else is just bonus.
It was the missing piece. Yeah.
Right. And so right after she got off the stage, I went over there in the lobby and met her. I'm like, "I need to know you." You know?
Yeah.
As we got back from that weekend, I, you know, made the phone call, and they've got a really great program. It doesn't like nickel and dime you on expenses or anything. It's pretty much a flat fee, you know, minus some extra work that you may need done. But it's it was incredible. And they're so professional that the things that I did not know that I didn't know, they were able to identify that. And we were able to jump, you know, as soon as we had that, we put an offer in on our first hotel. Hey, I got all the pieces, David. Let's go get one. And we found a great deal. And that was in February of 2020 when we put our offer in our first hotel deal. And while we're waiting on the purchase and sales agreement, you know, we're waiting on, we had the signed LOI, we're waiting on the purchase and sales agreement to finalize. And at this time, I'm having legal documents drafted and everything.
Right.
And then COVID hit. And so David and I are like, hey, that's probably an irresponsible time to go after a hotel right now. And so we just waited till the end of 2020. Towards the end of 2020,
right?
When some of the stuff started recovering, but the big factor was that, there's a saying, when's the time to invest and when there's blood in the water, right? And this was probably the most devastating event in the hospitality sector, maybe ever, because the entire nation shut down travel for a month. And then it didn't just go right back to normal. I mean, it still has not achieved, pre-pandemic occupancy rates.
Right. So tell me about you figured out how to put syndications together to purchase hotel deals. What kinds of opportunities are you seeing now since coronavirus? You're doing some deals and maybe you have deals in the works now. But what's kind of the typical type of deal, and how does that compare to like a multifamily deal? You've been in, you've looked at some of those deals as well. What's the difference between from an investment standpoint, a hotel deal and a multifamily property deal?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpackage there. That's some great questions. And here's what we found. Have you ever heard of the blue water, red water strategies?
No, what is that?
Okay, so, if you consider an ocean, right? The red water is where all the fish are, right? That's where all the feeding is. That's where all the demand is, right? But that's also where all the competition is, right? So in the blue water strategy, right, and in blue water, there's less competition, but there's also less demand. There's less supply, right? So what you have to do is look for blue water opportunities in a red water environment. So a heavily demanded environment, right, with very little competition. And so we've taken that. I've lived with that concept. So if I ever find myself in a market that's highly competitive, that's where your returns go down. That's where, they get impacted, right? They're diluted because of the competition. So right. I have nothing against apartment complex. And I think a lot of people that I talk to think that I am anti-apartment. I am not anti-multifamily at all. I think it's a phenomenal asset class, a phenomenal resource. So many people, that's in the natural progression, right? So you a lot of real estate investors start at wholesale, get into flipping, and then they get into buy and hold, and then they get into small multifamily, move into big multifamily, and then divest, and then move out from there. And case in point, I went to the best ever conference this year in Denver, and it was super cool. The first event that they did was this icebreaker event, and they had like eight of us at these round tables, about 1,500 people at all these tables, this massive room. And, they gave us about 20 minutes just to get to know those eight people. And then after that 8 minutes, they're like, all right, who here is interested in multifamily? And like the whole room's hands went up. They're like, all right, well, we can't. Okay. So if you are interested in multifamily, move to one side of the room, right? Everybody else just kind of stay in place. And 95% of the room was interested in multifamily. And of the people that I were talking to at that time, and this isn't that long ago, I mean, we're talking, February, March timeframe.
Right, yeah.
And, of this year. And, so I'm asking, I'm there to meet. I went there with an agenda, right? I want to find limited partners, accredited investors. I want to find funds. I want to find general partners that can help us grow bigger, faster, because they know the opportunity that we have. Mm-hmm. And so what it boils down to is that I didn't meet, I met about six or seven people there. I met about six or seven people there that are, sorry about that, that were into hospitality. They were interested in the hospitality.
Okay.
Of those people, a lot of them were interested in campgrounds. One or two in the hotels, but of the people that were interested in hotels, you know, what I found is that they weren't really interested in taking a hotel and running it as a hotel. They were interested in converting these distressed properties into multifamily, because multifamily had become super saturated and had a lot of cap rate compression. So the opportunity and the benefit of the opportunity has diminished because the demand is high and the supply is low. In the hotel industry, the demand was almost zero and the supply was virtually unlimited. And what I mean by that is, in August of 2020, there was a report put out by hotelmanagement.net. Mm-hmm. And they said that 80% of all hotel mortgages in the United States were in jeopardy of default, and that they expected 50% of all hotel mortgages to go into foreclosure proceedings.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it got pretty close to that. I mean, it devastated that market. So then you have to ask yourself, all right, well, who's the competition? Who's buying these hotels, right? So, you know, start with the big guys, right? Who's the big fish? Who's got all of the money, right? And those are your publicly traded REITs and hedge funds and things like that. And they're not interested in value add, right? It's too risky for their fund. You know, they're interested in long-term holds with the appreciation and the growth. That's where they can generate, you know, 6 to 12% dividend returns, because they're buying these fully stabilized properties. Well, that's not what we're looking for. We're not looking for stable. You know, we're looking for value add opportunity, but we don't want non-performing. We are looking for something that we can buy now at a cash flow positive rate and improve it. And you know, so in most other markets, and, you know, I mean, there's a couple other asset classes that have some opportunity in there, but the opportunity is so vast in the hospitality industry that virtually everything that you look at meets that criteria. And so who's competing with us? There's, you know, we've got multifamily conversion folks. I found that was is a very interesting tactic, and it does a lot of great stuff. It provides housing. Governments also incentivize that. So there's definitely some opportunity there for, you know, people that are kind of stuck on deal flow. But for us, it was, those people are not looking at what we're looking at, right? So
right.
You know, we're looking at hotels that are operating and mostly have an existing franchise or an independent that we can put a franchise on for as little money out of pocket as possible.
Okay.
Well, those kind of hotels are not conducive to, it's not cost effective mm-hmm. for a conversion, right? You know, you want to find an abandoned property with no flag, you know, or something that's been run like an extended stay type of deal without a brand or flag on it. So we're not in competition with them. So who are we in competition? You have to have franchise experience to get approval for a franchise, or you have to have franchise experience in your plan so you can hire a company with franchise experience to serve
okay.
that. But you know, that creates a, you know, they get really into the weeds. They don't want to sell it to you if you're not going to be a good brand ambassador, and the banks don't want to finance you if you don't have the experience in hospitality or hotel management. So you know, the people in hospitality and hotel management that would normally be in our competition just got eviscerated by, you know, by the downturn, and, you know, half of them lost their property, right? So a lot of those people are not competing anymore.
Right.
So it really created this perfect condition of an almost unlimited deal flow with zero competition. And you could pretty much write your own check.
So here's a question for you. How do you add value to a hotel? Is it management, or is it you need to renovate the units or add amenities? What are you doing to actually add value when you get a hotel?
Yeah, that's great. There's some a lot of things I love about hotels, right? And part of that is understanding what makes one run well. Our partner, David, is 30 years experience in the industry, and he's been doing virtually nothing but value add, improving, taking underperforming hotels in a market and returning them to peak performance, stabilizing and selling. And so, when you look at it, there's this incredible report that you can have access to. It's called a STAR report that you can pull in a hotel. And what's in that document is, I can pull it on any hotel I'm looking at, right? So if it's my hotel, I can look at what is my occupancy rate for this month. And that will also show me what my trailing 12, my trailing 3, my year to date. It'll also show what my average daily rate is, right? And then my revenue per available room, all that same data, in those timeframes. But then it also shows us what the comp set is, the competition, the local competition. And it also says what the index is doing. So, you're able to take a look at this report and look for those anomalies. Okay, they're being sold on the market at fair market value for its performance, right? You think NOI, right? But we don't, they work off of EBITDA in hotels. So, you think basically NOI, and, so you think NOI and how can I improve that? So we're buying, you're looking at these opportunities and the fair market price on them is based off of their performance, but you're looking at this report and it's showing that, hey, maybe my occupancy is comparable, but the average daily rate is 20, 30, 40% below what the competition's doing, right? Mm-hmm. That tells us a couple things, mm-hmm. right? That tells us that it's in revenue management, right? That it's typically in management, we can go in and we have, people that their sole job is to manage the revenue for everything that David owns, everything that David controls, mm-hmm. right? And so, if you can imagine, one hotel that we're doing right now is a Baymont Inn in Florence, South Carolina. It's an open offering, and it's a 506C, accredited investors only. But it's the location is proximate to a NASCAR town, right? Mm-hmm. Darlington Motor Speedway is mm-hmm. 10 miles from Florence. Okay. So when they do their race events, they do a lot of them, they kind of pack a week of events into those race weeks. And so everything in 75 miles will sell out. And our hotel will, should be getting around 275 to 350 per night on the average daily rate and virtually 100% occupancy, 100% occupancy during that period.
Right.
Well, if I didn't project that 2 years out, some of those rooms sold for $60, $70, right? And so I missed an opportunity to maximize my revenue. So that you see a lot of that. That's one place that gets complacent. When you start seeing complacency come involved in a business, that's one of the places that get hit. Right. In complacency. So that opportunity was there before COVID. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just now they're all there, because a lot of them are recovering from, they're not only dealing with revenue management, they're dealing with, some capital expenses that, got pushed off, or they're dealing with, some internal management, because they're having trouble hiring people or whatever that factor is. Typically boils down to the management, which is very inexpensive and very quick to fix.
Okay. So a couple of final questions. So tell me a little bit more about your company and how people really can, what are the opportunities for people to participate in some of the deals? And I know you might not be able to really go into detail, and I'm not necessarily asking for that anyway. But in general, what kinds of opportunities are there for people that don't know you and they're kind of intrigued by what you're saying about investing in hotel syndications? Just run me through, in general, what kind of deals are available.
Sure, definitely. So Tempest 22, you start with Tempest, right? Tempest is a storm, a hurricane of sorts, right? A massive disruption and a force of nature. So our company is taking a different approach to deal flow than virtually anybody I've ever talked to. And so we look at, we took that as like, all right, well, we are disruptive in private equity. We are a veteran-owned, fully disabled, every you know, we got three partners and are all 100% disabled.
Okay.
And, you know, so, it, you know, vet, you know, the veteran community is very important to us, and there are a couple of key factors that are very important to us, like, you know, veteran suicide.
Yeah, absolutely. There'll be a lot of people that will want to learn more about that with you. So, yeah, go ahead. I interrupted you.
No, perfect. You know, there's 22 veteran suicides a day, data. So, you know, we chose the 22 in the name to really bring that awareness to the 22 veteran suicides, you know, that occur every day. And it is our intention to donate a significant portion of our profits to veteran organizations to try to at least make a dent and bring that down to 12. You know, ideally we can bring it to zero, but
right. Wow, that's awesome, Danny. I didn't know that about your company. So that is really incredible vision and a why, a big why for you guys in your company. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you can find us on tempest22.com. You know, I'm all over LinkedIn. So I have a Tempest22 LinkedIn page, and then you can find me at Danny Fry on LinkedIn. We have our offers on there. You know, we currently have three. We are very flexible too. We like to tailor make them. Right. So every deal is different. We take an entirely different approach to every single deal that comes to the table. Sometimes it's a joint venture structure. Sometimes it's in a 5 or 6 series syndication type structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason we do that is because, you know, especially with the joint venture, this is very unique. This is a very unique opportunity for people that imagine, you know, there's someone out there that wants to get into hotels, right? They love it. They want to own it. They want to run it, you know, whether it's a boutique or whatever. But, you know, they're running into the problem of experience. Being able to come in as a joint venture partner gives them some active experience in hotel ownership. Mm. And so that resume, they're able to carry that resume up. So, you know, let's say if somebody is looking to buy their own hotel, you know, there's an opportunity to joint venture with a world-class operator like David Stahl. And we structure it to make it, you know, very beneficial. So
right.
That's something very unique to us.
So I'm going to put your contact information in the show notes. So anybody that's listening, they can go into the show notes later if they're driving or whatever. And I'll put your LinkedIn profile there. So it's really easy for people to just click and find you. So that's great. So is there anything else that you would like to mention before we end this episode that I didn't ask you or something that you would like to mention? I don't want to leave anything, no stone unturned if there's something important, because I, you know, I think the hotel industry is really interesting to me, and you're the expert on this, and I don't even know half the questions to ask.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we dig into it pretty hard, but what I would guess that the last thing, you know, the last real thing that I would say is that, you know, our company doesn't, you know, we don't identify as a hotel syndication company. What we identify is private equity. Right now, our current operation is entirely focused on hotels. And the reason that is we have an operator, you know, we got a great operator and we got a great opportunity. But, you know, we monitor market cycles. So if you think about a market cycle on a wheel, at the top of the wheel, we call it the top, right? That's the peak of the market. At the bottom, of course, that's the bottom. That's, you know, that's where it's least value. And then you have, it rotates in a clockwise position. So it starts, you know, go from the top, you know, then you have a decline down to the bottom, and then you have a climb back up to the top. Everything works in cycles like that. Every business, every industry, every asset class, and they're not all in the same space at the same time. Typically in a recession, like what, you know, where I think we're kind of in or maybe even heading, you start seeing a lot of them that are in the decline, right? A lot of opportunities in the decline. You know, one of the things that makes hotels so intriguing right now and so valuable right now is that, you know, when you're looking at the stock market, you're looking at cryptocurrency, you're looking at, you know, even at, you know, apartments or other commercial real estate assets, you know, single family homes, that it's really hard, you know, it's really expensive, right? And the margins are low, or, you know, it's losing value at such a rapid rate, you don't know, you know, when to exit or when to get in. For hotels, we know when the bottom was, right? In March of 2020, you know, they ceased travel to about, you know, cut it down to about maybe 5% of, you know, what the normal travel was across the country for about a month. And then it didn't really increase it. Like I said, it still hasn't really increased back to pre-pandemic levels on this month in 2019. Now, the average daily rate has increased because of the inflation. So our occupancy is still down about 4% versus where it was in 2019. But we are 17% higher on our ADR, on our average daily rates, which increases, that's your revenue. So, you know, that, you know, we are in decline, right? We know we're in decline because the bottom was in 2020, right? It will, it's not going to go back there unless there's another global pandemic, right?
Right.
So even as we're growing here, it may slow down, you know, it may even retrograde a little bit, right? But it is not going to go back to the bottom. And so, but the thing is that the opportunities that are out there are still being valued and priced at or near the bottom, right? And then the opportunity to improve them, to bring them up to their peak, there's just such a big gap there that costs very little to get into.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Danny, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me. We could talk for a long time about this, and I hope that one of these days we'll actually meet and we could have a longer conversation. But people know how to contact you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, thank you, John. Thank you for having me on the show. This was a blast.